Hello, hello. Welcome, beautiful soul sisters. I am so happy that you are here. This is a space where we remember what it means to be wild women walking upon this earth, exploring that which is often unseen and unspoken. Together, we practice using our voices and the ancient ritual of storytelling, connecting about all that unites us as we share our stories of birth, life, and death. Today is Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. The moon is currently waning, moving towards a new moon solar north node eclipse in Aries on Monday, April 8th, when this podcast will likely air. Although, if I'm able to get Leilani in before then and now, I'll probably air that one first and this one later. And I don't know about you, but I'm already feeling the fire and the shaking things up energy as we approach this portal. I am currently in Washington State, in Western Washington, in my mother's home here. If you've been following along, the babe I am awaiting to be present for the emergence of is still presently cozy in their mother's womb. If you'd like to watch this episode instead of just listen, you can do that on Earthing Nova on YouTube if you want to see my face. If you have stories that you would like to share on the Heart of the Soul, please send me an email through my website. I would love to hear from you. I recently realized that there was a technical error on a couple of the forms on my website that resulted in me not receiving potential submissions. Like for probably over a year. I don't even know. I was receiving submissions through one form, but realizing I wasn't su receiving submissions through these other forms. Like, I'm like, I've never even received one through here. So I just figured out and corrected the technical error. So if you have submitted your story or a question and you did not receive a response from me, please, please submit again. And I'm so sorry. Please submit again. I respond to every single submission I get that isn't like spam. So please submit again. The forms should all be working now, or you can email me directly at amana@birthingnova.love. And that's also listed on my website. And I'll try and remember to put it in the show notes here as well. So as I said, I was scheduled to interview Leilani of Mana Medium today. She's a beautiful medium, and I'm so excited to interview her, but she had to reschedule at the last minute, which is why I already had this time carved out and decided to. I was kind of looking through my notes. I have lots of different ideas of things, solo episodes that I'd like to record for you, and just decided to record Charlo Eliana's birth story for you today. So I'll be reading a bit from some notes that I have and also trying to riff a little bit as well. Please remember, as with all stories, the way that we tell them changes over time and depending on how and who we're telling them to. So the way I tell it today is going to be different than the way I might tell it, a year from now or the way that I told it a few years ago. So if you are new to the podcast and don't know my history, Charlo was actually the seventh spirit to enter my womb. After my first experiences with pregnancy were a 6-week miscarriage and then a full term loss. And then after that, I had my son Odin. I birthed him just 7 minutes after our midwife arrived. And then I had two more early births or miscarriages. And then I conceived Charlo on the summer solstice of 2019. I remember coming to like a real moment with universe. Like I was so desiring this next baby and really hoping for a girl. I am a bit, my husband Sam says that I'm like a woman's woman. Have been very much into all things birth and mothering since I was a baby myself. I mothered my oldest friend. She was my next door neighbor. I'm just like 15 months older than her. And there's photos of me like mothering her, feeding her in her high chair. So, anyhow, I really spoke to universe and was like, please, let this be. And also came to this acceptance that my son might be my only living child. And yet, she came into my womb right around summer solstice. My husband and I also got to go see Ma Muse around this time. If you don't know their music, check them out. I love them. A friend in the community had arranged for the band to play a concert in her backyard. So it was a super intimate in the neighborhood concert with lots of other women and people that I knew. And I didn't know she was in my womb then, but she was. And so that was a really beautiful experience. I was so excited to find out that I was pregnant. I did do a pregnancy test. And of course, given, well, not of course, but given my, for me, given my previous experiences, I remember speaking to this little wombling, urging her to stay, imagining her being born healthy and outliving me by many years. And this was my call out to universe that this would be so, to universe, to my ancestors, to my guides. And I don't have written down here when it started, but I did experience really, I would call it extreme nausea and vomiting all day, all night, nausea and vomiting that lasted until about 35 weeks in her pregnancy, when it kind of backed off and I was only vomiting once or twice a day, not all day and all night. So in early pregnancy, I'm not sure exactly when it began, but for sure within the first few weeks, I was vomiting and vomiting and vomiting. I vomited at work. I worked in a hospital at the time in palliative care. And so they have those little like puke bags. They're blue. They were blue in our hospital. So I was having to carry those around with me everywhere and vomiting in the stairwell, in the bathrooms, in my car. It was really, really intense. And in it was so intense that even I was puking if I had to, like, when I woke up to like roll over in bed, I needed to vomit, or when I got up to pee, I was vomiting. It was happening so often. I wound up having some IV fluids that helped somewhat, but anyhow, my husband even wrote me little love notes on the back of the toilet seat so that when I lifted up the toilet seat to puke, there was a little love note there. He bought me a knee pad so that it was a softer as I retched into the porcelain throne, which I thought was really thoughtful and sweet. And that made this pregnancy really hard in so many ways. It was like, yes, stay, baby. I love you. I want you. And yet I was just miserable of being nauseous and throwing up. And it was depressing to me. It was hard because I felt sad that I wasn't able to be the same type of mother that I was to my son at that time. He was 2 years old, and I couldn't do the same things with him, wasn't playing with him in the same way, couldn't go places. I felt very sort of secluded, isolated, because even if just didn't feel like I wanted to try and make plans with people because I knew that I might not be able to follow through. I really try to be a woman of integrity with my word to the best of my ability. And so I would have to cancel plans with people. I also just felt, yeah, it was hard to hold a dialogue feeling nauseous like that. And so I felt pretty sad and isolated at the same time as I was like elated and excited to be holding this life in my womb. It also was interesting because this aspect of her pregnancy really mirrored my pregnancy with Hartley. So Hartley was my baby who I birthed at full term. But knowing at the time that she didn't have kidneys, so she wouldn't live after she was born. In her pregnancy, also, I was nauseous and vomiting basically throughout the whole thing. So there was part of me that wondered that. And then my son's pregnancy, I just vomited once, and that was because I was like sick with something, but didn't have the same kind of nausea and vomiting that I did with Charlo's pregnancy, of course. We didn't know her name was going to be Charlo then, but. So there was this questioning part of me that wondered if maybe Charlo also didn't have kidneys and wouldn't survive. And so I sat in that mystery. I knew that I could get an ultrasound to confirm that, but I really did not want to do that. So I chose not to do that. I chose to trust that she would be alive and well, and knew that even if she wasn't, I would want to birth her at home as I did Hartley anyway, that I wouldn't induce labor any sooner. I wouldn't choose a different birth location. I wouldn't choose to have a medical provider there. So, yeah. Okay. So during her pregnancy, I started preparing my birth space. This was something that brought me a lot of joy, although I didn't know for sure where I would actually birth her. I sort of decided to focus on our living room, where I hung some mirrors and different artwork of women, some pregnant women, some women with their babies. I hung photos of my ancestors, of my maternal grandmother and my paternal grandmother, of my own mother. I had this little altar space with plants and crystals, this Gaia figure, this beautiful Gaia figure, a little hat that I'd crocheted for my daughter. The one medical thing that I did do in this pregnancy was choose to have the maternal blood test to know the baby's sex. So I did know that she was a girl, from I think 11 weeks-ish or something like that. So anyway, side note. I had like photos of myself as a baby, some photos of my son Odin, some photos of me as a baby with my mother, like my mother holding me when I was a baby, my maternal grandmother holding me when I was a baby. I had a lot of fun creating this space, and it sort of, shifted and evolved throughout the weeks and months. I had birthed two other live babies in this house. Hartley was born in our living room area, so like the same sort of space in a birthing pool. And my son Odin was born in our normal bathtub, in our bathroom. So of course I had other little things throughout the house, but I did decide in this pregnancy and preparing for this birth not to get a birthing pool, and knew that if I did want to birth in water again, like I had our first two, that I could just do that in a normal bathtub. But I was also curious of having a land or dry birth, as I knew that this was likely my last experience birthing a baby. So I'd planned to have a free birth from the beginning. My grandmother actually birthed my mother unintentionally, unassisted, or like a free birth. Of my mother and also of her older brother. My uncle was born in a car. And I recently, when my mother's cousin was here visiting at my mom's house where I am now, learned another little part of my mother's birth story, and that she was born in Call, which I'm like, it was so fun to learn that extra detail about her birth. I had heard the story that she was born in her grandmother's house. She came quickly, like her older brother, and my grandpa, I guess, was like putting his pants on upstairs, and my mother was born right there on these stairs that I got to go visit when I was a child. So, yeah, side notes, spin-offs. Pause for a drink here. So I spent, those last weeks. I got to my due date. So of course she was born in March of 2020, and I was working in a hospital at the time. Luckily, I had decided to take time off from her 40-week mark. or what some people call their due date, although babies can be born from 37 to like 44 plus weeks. I have supported many moms who birthed through this whole spectrum of time. So I knew that the birthing window is wide, and I trust birth, I trust babies, I trust labor to begin in its own magical timing. But I did take off work from 40 weeks. So that's when I was on March 16th. And she was then born at 40 weeks and 1 day on one day. I thought it was 2 days for some reason. I have 1 day written here, but I think it was 2 days. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. So it was nice to have that time off, although there was kind of the weird things happening in the world, the unknowns with COVID and not knowing what that meant or whatnot. So I remember waking up each morning and just caressing my womb and asking my daughter, like, will today be your birthday? And then just going on with our days, enjoying the spring sunshine and time with my son as I started to feel a little more normal, as I wasn't puking as often at that time. I did have a few sort of, you know, confusing bouts of practice sensations. And yet the days continued to pass by with her safe in my womb. Like I said, my 40-week mark came and went, and my belly continued to grow. And so did my patience. I knew that this little soul would come when she was ready. I totally thought she was going to be a Pisces. When I knew when her like 40-week mark was, my son had been born the day after his 40-week mark. So I just didn't expect for my third baby to be the one that stayed in my womb the longest. And so I thought for sure she was going to be a Pisces, and yet Pisces season came and went, and then we were into Aries season. And on the early morning around 2 a.m. on March 24th, I awoke to fairly intense contractions, sensations that were difficult to endure while lying down. I remember in my son's labor, I was able to kind of like, you know, get up on my hands and knees and then lay back down, but they were not comfortable. They were more intense than his had began from the first sensation. So after I had three in a row like that, I decided that I wasn't going to be able to like lay down and fall asleep in between, that these weren't going to be sensations that I could continue to like lay down and rest for, not knowing how long labor would be. So I decided to get up and see if they continued, and they just increased in intensity. I remember in my other labors, and especially in Odin's, I was up for several hours by myself before and really enjoyed that time, just laboring with him, not knowing he was a he. And so I got up and just started trying out different positions and movements to see if I could ease the painful sensations that were occurring. I wanted the sensations, but I wanted to see if I could find a rhythm and ease the pain. I spoke to this little wombling and asked her to slow down, to ease up. I turned on music. I went into, you know, my birthing space. And yet they just only in, I did not time them at all. I have no idea what their timing was, how long it lasted, or how much space was in between. That was another thing that I'd committed to do in this labor, was just let them be what they are. And I released the need to record or document their timing. But I could feel that they were stronger and more intense. And I was struggling to find a way to like cope with them. And I was trying to find my rhythm and comfort in them, but I just couldn't. So I was enduring them, and that was okay. But I decided to wake up my husband, Owen, for some support. Yeah, I remember him being surprised that I was, you know, that they were so intense, and that I was, you know, saying fuck, fuck, fuck over and over. And Saying, I don't remember. I should look back. I'm in the process of creating another birth video of Charlotte's birth video, kind of from my perspective. So my dear friend Clementine, who is the one who took all the video footage, she put together a birth video of Charlotte, which I love and adore. And there are like parts of it that I would have included that I would like to include in a maybe more comprehensive birth video of her, and perhaps insert some little storytelling from me. So that's a project that I'm working on. I'm excited to share that with you when it's ready. So yeah, I was saying things like fuck and I don't want to do this and it hurts and like can't you stop and all of that. So Owen was there with me and he did everything that he could, everything that I asked him to. It felt good to me just to have him there and witnessing me and to have some of his physical touch. I liked to be sort of enveloped by him. That felt supportive to me. I remember my mother-in-law woke up and came upstairs at one time from the noise. It was our plan to have her there. She was staying with us at that time because she was there to support my son, our son Odin, who had, said that he wanted to be present for his sister's birth, and yet we knew that there was a chance that in the moment he would change his mind. So she was there to be his, safe and secure person that could take him somewhere else if he chose that during labor. And I remember she came and like sat up with us for a bit, and I didn't like having another person observing me. So I remember asking her to go back downstairs. So she totally respected me. She was such a beautiful presence. It wasn't anything she was doing, just the what I needed in that moment. So she did. She went downstairs and hung out there until we had asked her to come back up and like wake up our son as we were getting closer to my daughter's emergence. So I had in my previous labors and births really wanted to have photos and video of the event because I'm so like, in that otherworldly birth realm that I'm really able to go to as I'm supported in such beautiful ways at home by my husband and the people that I trust and love and that love me and that I bring into that space. So that's something I really knew I wanted for this. And yet I wasn't sort of thinking about that in the moment. So I'm grateful that my husband reminded me and asked if he should call our dear friends Clementine and Rakana. And I said, oh, yes. So he called them and they arrived around, 4 a.m., just, 2 hours after I was awakened with my first contraction. Although for me, it felt like quite a while later. So Owen had prepared a space on the floor with, we used painting tarps. I know a lot of people use like a blue plastic tarp to protect the rug or whatever floor you have. But I decided I didn't want the crunchy plastic. So we used a painting tarp instead that was just doubled over. And I also like sat on a towel. I wound up kind of settling in front of this big full-length mirror, and I had a sort of round mirror down near the floor that was just, it was just around me about this big. And I had it angled in a way that if I was birthing right there, that I could potentially witness my daughter emerging from me, which I thought was beautiful. Since my husband was behind me and he's quite tall, I really enjoyed being able to, we could make eye contact like through the mirror. It's something that we kind of practice anyways. If we're in the bathroom together and he'll put his arms around behind me and we'll like smile at each other through the mirror. So I really enjoyed that. I could meet his eyes and he was able to hold me as my sensations continued to increase. Our, friends arrived. I remember saying fuck, fuck over and over again. I'm definitely going to include that in the next birth video. I also remember, I was like sitting on a towel and they were, just getting more and more intense. And I felt like maybe I was gonna poop, but I wasn't sure because I also know the like head of the baby can really feel like you're gonna poop. And I wound up not getting up and going to the toilet before that contraction. And then I did poop a bunch and I was like, oh, yep, I'm pooping, I'm pooping. So yeah, I pooped onto this towel, which was fine. After that contraction was over with, I did get up and go to the bathroom and my husband like cleaned up my poop in the towel and it was fine. I didn't like being on the toilet in labor with sensations. So I think I must have had like one sensation there on the toilet, but like wiped myself up and then came back to the living room and I had another towel that was under me. And I always kind of imagined I would wind up birthing maybe on hands and knees or on my side or in some other squatting or some other position. But where I landed that felt good to me was my husband was, sitting behind me. He was behind me for a while with nothing behind him, which was hard for him to kind of create a brace for me. So he wound up putting this foot rest thing, a pretty big foot rest thing. And so he had it against the wall so he could lean against that. And then I could lean against him and some towels for extra cushioning. And I was just in sort of a semi-reclined position with him there, which felt nice. I remember looking in the birth video, I wound up kind of tilting onto my, it was onto my right side of it. And even had one foot kind of on the other side of his leg at one point and sort of lifting myself up. I'm sure just intuitively opening up my pelvis more and allowing space for this little baby's head to emerge. I remember feeling a shift in the sensations as I went through transition and entered the pushing stage. And my body began to push by itself, gently at first, and then stronger and stronger. Recognizing that this was happening, I asked for my son to be woken. So they went and got Sigrid, and she woke up my son, and they sat on the little, on the big footstool behind us. It was approaching about 6 a.m., not quite 6 a.m. at this time. I remember really in this stage, sort of releasing, succumbing to the sensations. As the pushing came, I knew I was getting closer. All of my babies have come without, too many pushes. I did have awareness of like sort of the dim lights. I had the labor playlist singing in the background. As I felt my daughter's head beginning to emerge from my body, I placed my hand on her head and literally held her head in. Like, if I had not had my hand there, my body, my uterus would have pushed her out sooner. But my perineum was not ready for that. And I wasn't ready for that. So I had my hand there and I held counter pressure, holding her head in, giving my perineum some time to stretch and allow for her head to emerge. I didn't feel, just didn't feel ready. So I'm not sure how many sensations and pushings there were in that time. I wasn't like pushing along with the sensations at that time. I was just experiencing the pushing sensations and holding her head inside of me. I allowed her head to kind of, move a little bit out and in, like I said several times, and eventually, I think I even say something like, I know I've just got to let her come. And I released my hand and her head popped out with the next push sensation. I remember feeling some relief from this. And I think my husband says like, oh, baby, like, oh, something like that in the video. She wriggled and did her little turn. Most of the time, babies are their heads emerge with their face down. It's less common for face to be up. So her face was down. And then sometimes babies are born all in one, like their whole body, their head and their body comes out. But a lot of the time the head comes out and then they do what's called a restitution. And so she did that. And I remember like feeling that more intricately than I had in Odin's birth. So she turned, and then another big sensation came, and I gave a push, and half of her body came out, like about to her belly button or so. The umbilical cord was sort of lassoed like a sash, or maybe like you would wear a scarf. Around the back of her neck and back down. And I felt like that was stopping her from fully emerging. I remember asking my, so yeah, and her hands were up. He could see that she was breathing. I remember my husband commenting that she was alive. She had her hands in the air like this. And I asked him to reach down. So he was, trying to reach down around me. I was, holding her, but asked him to help, like, kind of ease her the rest of the way out. I don't know why I didn't think to like just push a little more, but I didn't anyway. As he helped lift her body up a little bit, her bum fell out, and that allowed me to be able to slip the cord from the back of her neck over, which gave her more freedom and allowed me to then bring her up to my chest. I know as soon as I unwrapped that cord, she let out a big cry. I pulled her up to my chest and she continued to wail. And so did we, as we marveled at our little baby girl alive and well. My husband said, "We have a baby." My mother-in-law, my son, and two dear friends were right there with us, witnessing these first moments of her earth side and her first breaths. I held her up in front of me as she exercised her lungs and said, "You're the one. You're the one. Look at you. Look at you." Oh, as we sat together on the floor with the blood, amniotic fluid, and more soaking her in with our laughter and tears. My son Odin was right there. It was so sweet to have him be so close. I remember my mother-in-law coming and patting my head and saying, "Well done, well done." Oh, love her. We just sat there in awe. And a short while later, I'm not really sure how long, I remember feeling the urge to deliver her placenta. So I asked for someone to bring me this little pie dish that I had chosen for this purpose. I know a lot of people use bowls, but I didn't want to have to like be high up. I know some people like squat or whatever. So the pie pan, I could just easily, kneel and rise up just a little bit. And so that's what I did. It was on my knees, holding baby girl in my arms, and slid the pie pan beneath me, gave a little push, and the placenta just slipped out right into the pie dish. It was the perfect size. And with the assistance of our birthing crew, I felt like it was I wanted to get in bed with her. So I carried my daughter, my husband carried her placenta, and other people helped kind of clean up the living room. And my husband brought in like a bowl with warm water and washcloths, and he washed some of the blood off of my legs and feet that were there as I settled into bed. He then squeezed some fresh orange and grapefruit juice for me per my request. And a while later, when it felt right, I decided it was time to do our cord burning ceremony as we had planned. I chose four long tapered beeswax candles. I had read that it could take a really long time, so I thought that if there were four, it would probably take less time. And there were four women there. So myself, Sigrid, my mother-in-law, Clementine, the one who did the videos, and Rakana, the woman who took photos. And I used a little, just it was just a little box, one that I had like received somehow secondhand. It was not an official cord burning box, so I tell you don't actually need a cord burning box. Some they sell official like cord burning boxes that have little notches where like the candles can sit in, sort of, but this served its purpose totally fine. I did create a little barrier for my daughter. I didn't know that. I knew about cord burning ceremony, but I hadn't known anyone else who had done it. So when I'd read online, some people had said that you should create some barrier to protect the baby from like sparks from the cord, but there were no sparks. So I did create this, you'll see it in the video, like this aluminum and cardboard barrier to like protect her from sparks. Were no sparks. I wouldn't use one in the future. I will put the link to her birth in the show notes. So there's like a longer version which shows some like before and after, including the cord burning. And then there is a short, but it doesn't like show her full emergence. It doesn't show me unwrapping the umbilical cord, that one that Clementine created. And then there is just a very short one that is just basically her emergence after her head is already out. It does include me unwrapping the cord and soaking her in right after she was born. So I'll link those in the show notes if you'd like to check them out. But yeah, so as we, it did take a few minutes for the cord to burn, but it was just beautiful to have these four women. And my husband did like the video of that time because Clementine was holding one of the candles. I sang the song, "We All Come from the Goddess," and to her we shall return like a drop of rain flowing to the ocean. Sang that over and over. Baby girl, unnamed at this time, remained calm and observant throughout. She had these like beautiful wide eyes. It was so beautiful to watch her watch this ceremony. It felt so magical and powerful. One of the reasons that I chose this way is I just find it to be like a gentler way. I like the ceremonial aspect of it. And I also appreciate that when you do a cord burning, it cauterizes the cord. So there's not a risk of baby bleeding out. So that's one of the reasons they put a cord clamp on, or that you would tie it off, because babies can bleed through their umbilical cord when they're freshly born. So the cord burning cauterizes that. So there's not a possibility of that. So after the cord was severed, I brought her to my breast and she latched for the first time and had her first drinks of milk. It was really easeful and beautiful. I remember my son crawled into bed and joined us and gently, was just caressing his little sister's head, which was so sweet, so simple, and so magical. We all just sat in awe of her as we reflected on the experience of this little new little soul's birth and experienced life with her outside of my womb. She was born just before 6 a.m. as the sun was just rising in this late March morning. And yeah, it was just so beautiful. And that is how her life began. We did not have a name chosen, and it actually took a few weeks for us to choose a name for her. We chose her middle name as Eliana, which means sunrise, sunshine. So that felt like it was in honor of her being born with the rising sun. And my husband had really wanted to name her Charlotte. And although I think Charlotte's a beautiful name, it just wasn't a name that I loved. I was really loving names like Winslow and Harlow and Willow. He really wanted to be able to call her Charlie. And just to back up, so he and I, when we first met, we each had like a name that we had like dreamt of naming our baby girls. And mine was India after my paternal grandmother. Her name was India. And he really loved the name Piper for a girl. And I remember even before we even had any kids, I was like, no, Piper is never happening. And he was like, India is never happening. So we had to like release those dreams that we had. But in the end, we wound up combining Charlotte and like Winslow or Harlow, actually now looking at the name Harlow, Harlow. So I wanted the W. We just added the C. So we named her Charlo, Charlow. And so, one of the nicknames for Charlotte is Charlie. So, which, it doesn't really make that much sense, but it is. So anyway, he calls her Charlie a lot and Charlo some, and I call her Charlo and Lolo. She just turned 4, and I asked her the other day, like, do you like it when I call you Charlie? Like, Dad calls you Charlie all the time. And she was like, no. And I said, what about Charlo? And she said, yes. And I said, what about Lo or Lolo? And she said, yes. I said, okay. Because sometimes I do call her Charlie. So I told her I would try to call her Charlie less and call her Charlo and Lolo more. I also call her Eliana sometimes, but I just find names are just a really important piece, and also want people to know that you don't have to name your baby right away. Whether you're birthing at home or in the hospital, they try to make you feel, sometimes might even tell you that you have to name them before you leave, but it's actually not true. You're not legally obligated to name your baby before you leave. So know your rights, know that you don't have to. I guess I'll leave it there for now. Thank you for tuning in. I hope that you enjoyed this episode of Charlo's birth story on the Heart of the Soul. You can support this podcast by donating to it using PayPal or Venmo links found in the show notes below. If you have stories that you would like to share on this show, please send me an email through my website. Like I said, the forms were not working. I had a technical error. So if you've submitted a story, or even submitted, on my grief page, if you submitted something to me and I haven't responded, it's because I did not receive it. I respond to every submission that I actually receive, and I've corrected the technical error. So you can use those forms now, or if you want to be extra safe, just email me at amana@birthingnova.love. If you would like to work with me one-on-one, please check out my current offerings on birthingnova.love. I will be doing another virtual mother circle coming up in the coming months. I haven't decided exactly when that will begin, but I would love to have you join that beautiful container. That is not a one-on-one container, that is a community container of women, of maidens, mothers, and crones, for all women, not just mothers. And if you're listening on Spotify, you can now send me a voice message through the link at the bottom of the show notes on Spotify. So I hope to see you. I hope to hear from you. Until next time, be brave, be bold, be love, and be the change that you wish to seek for, or you wish to see for yourself and for generations to come. Thank you for tuning in. And please also share the show, rate, and subscribe. Love, 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 everyone.